Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hello and welcome to the official Broad Wasted podcast where we're drunk on theater. I'm your host Brian Plofsky and oy vey. This episode is going to be such a shanda. It's mashugana, but we'll schmooze while we sit here on our tuchuses in our shmatas and do a little shtick. Hopefully it's not a bissel of a schlep for your ears. We've got some shiksas, goys, Jews, the whole mishpuchas here.
That's a great word. I don't even know what it means, but I love it.
It means family. Are we going to kvel or kvetch the whole time? Who knows? I just won't be a schmuck. Maybe I'll nosh or hand out some tchotchkes. Bottom line, I'm verklempt.
Aren't we all?
Joining us today are the usual chutzpah-filled klutzes, including Kevin the Mensch Jaeger.
I am quite a mensch.
And he's on a bench right now.
He's on a bench.
I'm a mensch on a bench.
Yeah. Kimberly, our game master and unofficial babysitter for the hour.
Yes, no Yiddish, thank you.
You're welcome. And with us today are two members of the fantastic Tony-winning Indecent on Broadway. Woo-hoo. You may have seen them previously on The Great Wide Way.
Great Wide Way.
In shows like Act One, Brooklyn Boy, I'm Not Rappaport, Aida, and Ron and The Visit. Let's give a big Broadway-said welcome to Friends of the Show.
Friends of the Show.
You're always drinking.
Break the cycle, Kimberly.
Sorry. I don't even know that I do it.
Mimi Lieber and Tom Nellis.
Hey.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Was that Yiddish you were speaking?
Some of it. Oh. Yeah.
That's from your grandma?
My grandma and my mom use every single one of those words very...
That's so great.
Often. Especially things like schmuck and klutz.
I was raised Roman Catholic, but my grandma showed me Funny Girl, so I heard some of those words.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Do you remember any of them?
Yentl,
and no, she schlept, and she did all that kind of stuff. Uh-huh. There were a couple of those words in there.
Everyone schleps.
I mean, my mom still uses verklempt all the time.
Oh, yeah. Your mother,
I'm a bagel on a plate of onion rolls.
She says verklempt a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
Like in real life?
Yeah, real life.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's a really real word.
Yeah.
I was also raised Roman Catholic, but my dad used to go around saying Ish Kabibel. It's a Ish Kabibel.
Oh, the cheesecakes?
No, Ish Kabibel. So one day I was in the dressing room with Ron Lieben. We were doing Merchant of Venice, and Ish Kabibel came out of my mouth. And Ron said, Ish Kabibel, you know Ish Kabibel. What do you know about Ish Kabibel? I don't know anything. Who's Ish Kabibel? My dad used to say Ish Kabibel. It was apparently a radio show.
Yeah.
And the character was Ish Kabibel.
My dad used to say it too.
And once you start saying it, you can't stop.
Tom, you say things like that all the time throughout the show, under your breath and as a warm up. It's a good mouth warmer.
Ish Kabibel?
Ish Kabibel and blah, 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 blah,
blah. I'm shocked what I say during the
so
show.
So are we.
And I think. It's like if I bump into Rich, it's like, and he's like, and I'm like, did we just say something to each other? Because
no, you're channeling a crazy old Jewish man.
And doing it rather well.
So that's under his breath.
For an Irish guy, yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about the show. I mean, you guys were extended, which is super cool. Get your tickets, see it before August 6th, correct?
August 6th, yeah. We're there till and no longer.
But we weren't just extended. I mean, we were...
Resurrected.
We were resurrected.
We were resurrected and lofted even higher.
So what was those like? What was that, like, 48 hours like?
That was like... it wasn't just, like, what was that like? It was... Daryl Roth had the guts to call it on Thursday night without having a single ticket sold...
Not a dollar advance.
...on Tuesday.
Wow.
Nothing. they'd given all the money back.
Right.
And
right?
had gotten everyone that had future tickets in before the wire to make sure they honored their ticket holder.
So there were no sales.
Oh.
Zero
and
advance.
She said, let's do it. I don't know. And she said, be prepared because it's not going to be... Because when she announced we were closing, suddenly we filled up.
Right.
Everyone was getting
excited.
In under the wire.
Yeah.
So she said, be prepared because it's not going to be like that next week.
We're going to have dead houses until there's word of mouth.
And no. Yeah. Tuesday came and the place was packed.
To the rafters. To the rafters. And other producers have said of her that she has the biggest balls on Broadway. Because she made this call.
That's amazing.
And it paid. I mean, it paid off. Our houses are better now than they were, I think, during our run.
Oh, yeah. No,
consistently to the walls.
Yeah. We saw the Thursday after you announced, or after you reopened or just didn't close.
Yeah.
I don't know what to call that.
Didn't close.
Right.
But it was, it was completely full.
Yeah. What are, from your perspective on the stage, what are those audiences like? Like, almost now, but also pre and post kind of.
Well, one of the things that happened was all of a sudden we started skewing younger.
Way younger.
Interesting.
And then the social media thing started to cook.
Yeah.
And not because we were doing things, because
they were doing
things. And Daryl said, well, you know what? If we're going to do this, you got to tell them. You got to tell the people this Thursday night that we don't have a... We're going to be open on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Please tell somebody. And so...
It's turned into a thing.
Yeah,
we saw.
And Rich Topol pulled a card out of Oscar Eustace's pocket and said, everybody take out your phone. Take out your phone.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever going to let you do this in a Broadway house now, but you can film, you can take pictures, you can tweet, whatever. Just take down what I'm going to say. And then he said, you know, we're going to be open on Tuesday, and we're going to be open until August.
Please tell your friends,
and
we're here.
All of these phones were out.
I was going to say, for this type of generation, like, that's like, this is a moment. Like,
that's right.
That's amazing.
And then something caught fire because of that.
And they go nuts with...
It also helps that it's a phenomenal play.
Okay.
Thank you. We'd like to.
It wouldn't have worked
that
without that. And I'm glad you said that, because I don't want producers thinking, oh, this is a good idea.
Right, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because the truth is, it's a phenomenal theatrical experience.
Your question was, what's the difference
between
the houses
and after.
Before and after? Our houses have always been rapt, silent, pin drop silent, and wonderfully laughing and understanding. And if for any reason they're not a big laughy house, that's all right. They're listening. They're taking it in a different way. But they've been phenomenal audiences all the way through since the... kind of wonderfully enjoying the inside stuff and then devastated. You can feel that they're devastated.
Mm-hmm. But yesterday at the matinee, we got our first sleeper. And I think that means we've arrived.
They're amazing.
Cheers to the sleeper.
We've arrived.
Take a nap at a Broadway show, why don't you?
Yeah, it's a very expensive nap.
And the thing about skewing younger is kind of wild. I mean, how many shows have we all been in where you look out and it's a generally, you know, it's a graying audience.
Mm-hmm.
And that was our audience before.
That was our audience by and large. And, you know, who can afford tickets? Young people are on budgets, etc.
Right.
Now, there was a woman on the please sign my program line the other night.
Yeah.
It was her 15th time seeing the show.
I believe that. Yeah.
15th time. And they're young, they're women, they're not all women, but they're so excited and so happy to be there. One girl one night said, I'm in acting school, but now I'm going to apply to grad schools because I want to be a writer because of this play, because of Paula Vogel.
That's amazing.
I know. So they're great.
I think it's so incredible, like, to just talk about your audiences. I've said this before when I talked about when I first saw it. My experience was actually like heightened by the people around me.
Yeah.
I think more than any other play on Broadway, this show, like, the audience plays like that final cast member.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
Just because as a Roman Catholic boy growing up in like a world very different than this was like an experience that I could have felt slightly isolated from.
Yeah.
But because of the like amazingness of the writing and how the performances all made it so visceral. But on top of that, I think the audience, just feeling these people around me who were not just watching and not just experienced, but like living alongside these
it
characters.
Feels like,
you can feel that. And so I felt
you also literally invited in. at the beginning.
Yeah,
you are. Yeah. Yes.
Thank God you said that, because I don't know how many times Rebecca told us you're going to invite them in.
Yeah.
Invite them in. Enjoy them. Love them. Tony wanted to tell this story.
Invite them in.
But it's true.
When she won, we were like, he flipped out. He was so excited because the three of us, he was the one who had seen it before.
Yeah.
Before
the
Tonys.
I was saying that this should win everything. Like, it was such an impactful experience for me in a Broadway theater to feel like I was learning from the person silently watching next to me.
Absolutely. That's beautiful.
It was just such a cool experience.
It's, you know, imagine sitting there and hearing her name called, sitting next to your husband, who's nominated for Best Director.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of like, I'm sorry, but I'm really happy.
Yeah.
But he was too. Actually, he had told he had told me long before that he wanted her to win.
Yeah.
He never expected to this
it was
year.
Like, it was one of those, yes! Aww.
But not necessary, luckily. Because he actually, he wanted her to win because she's a woman, because he felt this show had the most intensely directorial hand.
It's so well directed from every aspect, from just
the
acting to the just idea and the concept. We were saying one of my favorite things I've seen on Broadway this year is the way that dialects and accents and visuals all came together. Like this is so random. Like the movie Memoirs of a Geisha. If you watch that movie, it takes place in Japan, but you also have like Chinese diplomats coming to Japan, but they're all speaking the same language with the same accent. So it's just like this. That really bothered me. Whereas you go into something like Indecent, where it's there's a clear direction on who's speaking what, when, and how good are they at that language.
It's great that you got all that.
There wasn't always a clear direction. It took a while, and it was as confusing as all the Yiddish experts disagreeing with each other.
Oh, my God, yes.
Just about anything.
Oh, Yiddish experts arguing with each other?
Shocking.
It happens.
But it's true, and the subtitles, the projections are supposed to help you. You know, we start off in accents because obviously we're speaking another language besides Yiddish. Then accents disappear and the projection says in Yiddish.
Mm-hmm.
And it just sounds like American.
I love that.
Right.
And
that was so powerful.
What everyone I know, personal friends that have come to see the show, say eventually I didn't need to look anymore because I understood by the sounds you were making what was
going
on. And that's a
very
big relief.
True. Yeah.
With those subtitles,
super titles.
We're actually changed from day to day.
Day to day.
By that final member of the cast, the audience, because they would complain that that's not how you spell it. That is not right. And Rebecca would say, what's going on? Is this not right? Is it right or is it not right?
Amazing.
I thought it was right. No, it's not right. Change that. And that was, and really, that was the process, was a constant getting feedback from people and arguing.
It's
and
one of the reasons we got extended is this empowerment of the audience. We promised them, you can redirect
the
this show. No,
in
I'm
the show
joking.
Too.
We were all there. We were like,
I was like, oh man, that went over my head. I was like all invested in it. I was like, yeah, you're right. We were empowered.
And now that you say it, I want to change something.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me talk to you about oversized coats.
Let me talk to you about 100,000 degree weather outside
and
getting the wool dress on.
A fur raccoon coat.
Getting the coats on, getting the hats on, and sitting there.
At the beginning, I forget.
No, I get it later. I sit in it for about 20 minutes.
He thinks makes him better than all of
us. Yeah.
He's a fur coat martyr, and I approve.
As the summer goes on,
yeah.
I smell more and more like a raccoon, but also more and more like
a dead raccoon.
A raccoon that died a long time ago. And I sit
it's a coat.
It's what?
That's how it became a coat.
Yeah.
I have to say, I'm physically the closest to Tom throughout the show, and I do not know this to be true.
Yeah.
Oh, that's sweet of you to say.
Thank you.
Yeah. What was your relationship with God of Vengeance before this play? So if you don't know out there, you should, because you should see it. But basically, this is a play, among many things, about the history of Yiddish plays, specifically one called God of Vengeance. And it obviously deals with a lot of Jewish history, of the history of European plays and things of that nature. But, you know, the God of Vengeance is the primary kind of driving force throughout the play, if anything. Right. What was your experience with that historical play before this play?
I'd never heard of it.
Mm-hmm. I had heard of it and never read it or seen it. But as soon as the first audition happened, as soon as I got the call, I read it because it was clear from the pages I had to do that I needed to know that play.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
But if I dare say...
You may.
To what you just said, it's, you know, it's not really about Jewish history. It's not really about a Yiddish anything so much, although it obviously those are characters
right.
in the play.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very much about love, tolerance, immigration, the oppressed, the other, the outsider, and how...
Right now, in politics, right now.
In the politics, in the...
Paula likes to say there are many, many, many ways to enter this piece.
Absolutely.
And the Jewish dysphoria, that's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, you know, the through line, but it's...
Well, I think that's something to say, because, like, obviously, growing up Jewish as a Jew, like, I was very connected to that. As I heard these Yiddish words growing up, so every time I heard these words on stage, like, I had
thrill.
A flashback or, the memories washed over me, whereas Kevin mentioned, like, he came in a totally different avenue.
And then also, like, I was also brought in by, the homosexual storyline. Like,
of
that
course.
Was, like, something that really, like, appealed to me and brought it, like, being through that way, and then you kind of...
Okay.
There's different channels for people of different, walks
everybody
to find
has
their way
a,
in.
That's right.
And then once you're in, you can
mm-hmm.
kind of experience, like, the full 360 of the story.
Which is not the best
experience.
Thing about humanity.
Right.
You know, if
you find
the more personal, the more focused and specific, the more universal. This happens to be a story about a person that wrote a play over 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And how amazing was that? Not a young man in a group of rather smart thinkers in Warsaw.
1907.
In Poland. 1907, straight, married, happily, to a rich girl. Who
the dream, am I right?
Right? She wasn't the doctor. And they... You know, he writes this play that depicts the sweetest, purest love story that, you know, lifts up these two girls and their love for each other in a way, and talks about the wholesale sale of religion and hypocrisy. Mm. And, you know, this play he wrote blows my mind. Now, the longer I'm in our show, the more he amazes me as a hero.
Yeah.
That he did this. In a time when nobody was
when
writing
no
things like
that.
This,
right.
Let alone, you know, Jews, as they later say in the show, you know, please God, don't let them be Jewish. I have black friends that have seen our show that say they grew up with that, oh God, you know, news report.
Yeah.
I think that's largely what the play is about,
yeah.
is the journey of assimilation, and then, oops, gosh darn it, you know, somebody made us all look bad.
But it does seem to capture the soul of the Jewish experience, and particularly the immigration experience.
So very much.
Rebecca, and as we say Rebecca, we keep talking about Rebecca Teichman, who directed. Her parents were very funny. I've had a couple of funny interactions with
them.
They've
been around a lot.
They were around, quite a bit. And once, opening night at the Vineyard, I think, her dad came up and he said, you know, I think you've really accomplished something. I know it was very difficult for you. And Rebecca was behind him going, no. And then I was thinking, oh, I didn't realize it was difficult for me. And then her mom came up, I think when we opened here, and she said, you know what, you weren't Jewish. But now you are.
And
I don't mean to make fun of them.
They're
lovely,
the
lovely people.
And most supportive people.
But what I actually did was grow a beard. That's what actually
happened. Whenever there's a talk back and Tom comes back out to the house to join the talk back, you can hear people, and of course they say it to your face, but they also go, it's real.
Yeah.
Looking at his
and
beard.
Dr. Ruth comes one night.
Oh, that's amazing.
And they're having a talk back, and they begin the talk back, and Paula says, and this is Dr. Ruth, and right. She says, "Where's the guy with the beard? I want to dance with him. So we had to.
Oh, did you dance?
Oh yeah, we danced.
I hope you danced.
We danced.
You know, there it is. There that it was in my head.
I hope you danced.
Slip that one in there.
So you guys were extended, so people don't have to miss it, but. Typically, we play a little game.
Broadway Regrets.
Broadway Regrets.
Broadway Regrets.
Which are shows that you could have seen in New York that you didn't for some reason, and you just wish you had.
Oh, so you can get me tickets to Hamilton? Is that what you're saying?
We got Kevin tickets.
We did. That worked out.
Really?
Yeah, we did a Kev for Ham campaign. And then
Kev for Ham.
It worked out.
So Broadway Regrets is simply the shows you wish you had seen.
You had the opportunity.
Oh, you had the opportunity.
Yeah. Like,
and
just
meaning
you were in the city. Like, there's probably that you could have gone.
Like, why
didn't
you
go? Chinese and you hung out with your cat or whatever you did.
Yeah, I wish I'd
Thanks,
seen.
Thanks, Kevin.
I don't know. You can do other things.
That Doll's House 2, when they had the midnight show, I didn't. And
I
went
couldn't
over
face
there,
it.
And it was sold out.
I just couldn't face seeing a midnight show.
It was
a
midnight
show.
And I thought, of course I'll be able to get in. And yes, I'm going to put down the buckage and do it. And they said, we're sold out.
Oh.
I didn't even know that midnight show was happening until that day. And I was like, I would have. Oh, but.
And apparently it was like
there
a
are more.
Rock concert.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
So cool.
Oh, my God. There are so many. Well, in the course of this run, and I think you're talking about historically any show we could have and should have seen. But in the course of this run, I mean, this was an amazing season.
Amazing.
Oh, Broadway. Yeah. And we were a part of it, which is kind of great. But, oh, God, I saw nothing. The only show I saw, I'm so ashamed, is my husband's. Which is, you know, was The Little Foxes and was fantastic.
And I
fantastic.
Wish I'd seen your husband's, but I didn't
but
see
But I
that.
Mean terrible. Nothing. There were a couple of Sunday nights in rehearsal, or rather just any nights during rehearsal where people went to shows. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, people, normal people.
No people.
Happy people. I went home and just, you know, plots.
Late.
Yeah.
I wish I'd seen Sweat. I did see Oslo. I got to see Oslo.
Oh, good.
Which was
beautiful.
I missed Oslo, but I saw Sweat.
Oslo's
lovely.
Still open, right?
No,
no,
it's
no,
closed
just
Sunday.
Closed.
Oh, well, that's mine then.
There's yours.
And if we had closed, there would only be one standing. One play standing.
Oh, true.
That's right.
And
Doll's House.
Yeah.
But with,
oh,
not
yeah.
with original
but
cast.
But as it is, we're the only
That's right.
show
the cast is already
written
changed.
By
yeah.
a woman.
In fact, it already has.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, uh-huh.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. I have so many Broadway regrets. I don't know if we should get off of it, but it's sort of like every
more,
show this season is a Broadway regret.
That's a lot. That's good. Kev, do you have one?
Yeah. I love Sarah Bareilles so much. And I, like, followed her and went to, like, 5 of her concerts throughout New York. Mm. But I didn't get to see her in her 10-week run.
10 weeks.
Yeah. Had 10 weeks.
I know.
It's still
terrible.
A time frame that
you
didn't go
on that I didn't
terrible.
Make it.
Have you seen Waitress?
I have not. But I wanted to, and I told myself I was waiting until she went in because I knew she was going to go in.
You did?
Yes, and then I didn't see it.
Oh.
Very sad.
It's very bad.
But
I'm
going
to try to see
fantastic.
That.
Right. And you should still
and
see Waitress,
is.
But yeah.
But I just, I love Sarah so much that I should have seen it.
I wish I had seen Hand to God.
Mm.
Oh
God,
too.
Yes. And Stephen Boyer, the fabulous actor who played the lead in it,
mm-hmm.
is an actor that I worked with in 2 shows way back, like Rappaport. And he was the kid in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I never could. I was in Act 1 when he started. Anyway, there are a lot of shows I've missed.
I've been waiting for this moment. Can I just say you were so incredible in Act 1? I saw it, and then I recorded the live from Lincoln Center and watched it like 1,000 times.
Oh
because, well, because I'm obsessed with that story. I mean, anybody who's a writer in theater, I feel like should be obsessed with Act 1 and have read
God.
It like 3,000 times because it's the perfect story of like, just that magic of theater that makes you like believe
absolutely.
Why you're doing it. And it was such a beautiful production, but you were very fantastic in that.
Oh, thank you
and
so much.
I was going to ask, what was that like to do? Like, there's similarities between.
I was
one.
A Jew.
Right.
just say it.
Just, there's like taking the writer's experience and like the challenges that come toward a writer and things like that, and you're playing like a mother kind of in both instances.
It's interesting, isn't it? It's kind of two plays. My last two Broadway shows, this one and Act One, were sort of in a meta way shows about the theater and a life in the theater, and playing a Jewish person in the Persian in Jim Bosch. Hello. I've noted that sometimes, you know.
I was just becoming an English person.
That was happening.
I said, you know. I didn't mean to.
That moment when, like, Santino screams out, like, I want a life in the theater.
Yeah.
Like, that just, like, shivers through your entire body. Like,
I was an English person in the play, and I think it's coming over me. That's what's happening. I'm taking it out. I hate that
I see it. I wish the audience could be here right now.
Only if. Yeah. It was extraordinary to do that play. You know, James Lapine wrote it and directed it, and Andre and Chris Hart were so close to the play. I mean, the book. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it was deeply meaningful for Andre and Chris Hart. Moss Hart's son was there a lot. And my father had given me Act One when I moved to New York City from L.A. in...
That was a good year.
It was a good year. It was a good year for hippie kids with hairy armpits to move to New York.
What year?
We are friends. And, you know, there was that moment in the 70s that was still the 60s.
Yes.
But in any case, it was the book meant a lot to me personally. And being in two plays in a row that have a kind of theatrical umbrella over every aspect of the storytelling, all I can say is it's not something I think about, I dwell on, but... it's my life, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's all of our lives.
That's another way into the play. It's actually a play about the theater. You know.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's what we live every day, and every reason, everyone's personal reason is in the characters in Act One as well as in Indecent, kind of speak for all of us. Why we do what we do, why we have to do what we do, why we put ourselves in danger to do what we do, risk relationships and. So, it's wonderful.
And you came from, what is it? Like, that was the last show that you had done on the Broadway?
Yes, that was on the Broadway.
On the Broadway. And that also had, like the theatrical kind of, like, presentational and, like, inviting the audience in moments as well. What was that experience like? Like, the whole bringing that to life as, like, the final Candor and Ebb show?
You know, John Kander said it was accumulation, or is that what I want to say? The culmination of all of their scores. It was remarkable to work.
That's extraordinary that he said that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it was a beautiful score. To work with Chita Rivera, dude, I'm working with Chita
Rivera.
Chita Rivera
loves Tom Nellis.
Broadway.
Okay.
I mean, oh, yeah. I couldn't believe it. And if you walked out the dressing room, if you walked out the stage door and looked down the block, that was where the visit had originally happened with Alfred Lunt, two blocks down.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so there was this historical thing. And John Doyle, it's actually interesting. I hope that John gets to take a look at Indecent, because... John's work on The Visit was so beautiful, but there are a lot of parallels with
happening
in Indecent.
Yeah.
The sort of just the stripped down. And John's thing is always, look, a kid puts on a sheet and she says she's a princess, and you believe her, she's a princess. That's all you gotta do. Just stand up there and tell them who you are and believe it, and they will believe it. And you don't need anything. And that's certainly the aesthetic of Indecent. But working on The Visit was a dream.
And it must be said that Miss Madame Extraordinaire Dame Cheetah came to Yale Rep to see Tom in our show when we were our very first opening.
So you're bosom buddies, is what you're saying.
Bosom.
Yeah, they're Peter Scolari and Tom Hanks.
Basically.
Yeah.
I keep waiting for her to show up backstage here, actually.
Yeah, hope that happens, man. she's pretty busy. She and Tommy Tune
have been invited
to go out on the road, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Tommy Tune was in our house the other night.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we have
towering
that,
above everybody
towering
else.
Above everybody else. We have that endless 30
minutes.
He's so
minutes. Nice about that. He always asks us, just put me on the, you know, put me on the aisle. I don't want to, you know, I know.
Yeah.
I'm
it's a big guy problem. Yeah, I get it.
But he's so extraordinarily beautiful and grand. Mm-hmm. And the other night, you know how we have to sit there for 30 minutes before the show starts.
Oh, yeah.
The dead troop waiting to come alive to tell you this story. And you know, some of us peek sometimes. And I saw him and thought, Tommy Tune is at the show. And
he's hard to miss.
Well, that's what
he's
you were
beautiful.
Saying.
Did you think she was saying Ishka Bibble?
She says some interesting
things. Well, let's play a game.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shana Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shana Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of what I remember of Indecent is just this feeling of censorship. And I kept like coming back to ask myself, like, what would theater have to do now to get taken to court? So, to be fun, we have some Lights of Broadway show cards.
Ooh!
And I'm just gonna.
Have you seen these before?
No.
Lights of Broadway?
They're drawn by Squigs.
Oh.
And it's basically they're trading cards of Broadway personalities.
Yeah.
Squig.
And each. Squig.
Like,
so he
of
took
Lenny
over.
And Squiggy?
Yeah.
No.
He took over
Squigs?
For Hirschfeld.
Squig's Portrait of Us?
I don't.
Yeah.
Oh,
I don't
Squigs.
Have
oh,
one.
Squigs took over
for Hirschfeld.
Yes,
yes.
Got it. Absolutely no.
And
thank
so
you.
He's created every season, just a deck of cards of anything that happened that season.
Did you
that's
see
amazing.
That we became Legos?
Yeah.
Yes.
We followed
that
them.
Cool.
We're Legos.
Super cool.
Are
awesome.
You Legos?
There
who
does
Legos.
That? I'm singing your praises.
You're like
a very
so
cool.
It's called Broadway Legos, right?
Broadway
I follow them on Twitter.
No,
Broadway
no,
Bricks.
Broadway
that's
yeah,
what it is.
That, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Very cool.
Anyway,
so how does this work?
So we're just going to each grab a card from the deck that I've sprawled out.
Right.
But just imagine a show this person might have been in that would have been censored in the 20s.
And what if you got a show? You should look for a person.
Or just make that show something that would have been censored in the 20s.
So I'll go first.
Yeah.
So I pulled Bryce Pinkham.
Okay.
And I would say that in the 20s, if they had made like a 20s version of like Magic Mike the musical that's currently in the works.
Oh my god.
Is it?
Oh, Vegas. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going for a bachelor
right
party.
Is it the Tom Kitt and Brian Yorkie are right?
Oh yeah.
I think
that's
real.
So I would say that if Bryce Pinkham was playing the Channing Tatum part in
oh,
Magic Mike in the 20s, he would probably
that?
Be arrested.
I don't know what to say about that. I got
but
shuffled along,
oh,
which
whoa.
Actually
is
a parallel story to ours.
They were
and
just uptown of you guys.
That,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that I'd have to put in the other category of shows I wish I had seen, because I guess it...
I guess if you put the cast of Shuffle Along in your show in the 20s, they could probably have been censored.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, I love that.
Well, this okay. is tough. Oh, no, you go.
Oh,
you go.
Well, I got Bette Midler, and if she pulled in the 20s what she did at the Tonys this year, she's totally been censored.
Right? Absolutely.
And
I think
more power to her, by the way.
I have Gwen Verdon. And all I can say is she could have been a Broadway baby in any decade.
Oh, yeah.
Any time. Sure. I can't imagine anything she would have done that would have become a problem for anybody.
That's true,
and,
actually.
And she's sort of the perfect jazz baby.
She's getting quite
you know,
bizarre.
Surely. So, I'm just saying Gwen Verdon was safe.
She's safe.
She was safe in the closet.
She's safe.
And I have Lonnie Price, so I'm just sort of thinking the same thing. He would have just gone to the 20s and, like, directed...
He would have gone.
He would have gone to the 20s, and he would have directed Showboat backwards, and someone would have been mad.
If Benjamin Walker had tried to do... What was
American
it?
Psycho.
American Psycho
oh my
in
God.
The 20s.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Right?
I have Holland Taylor.
Oh, yes.
And she would have starred in the My Bathing Suit Is Too Short, the musical. And then they would have... And by short, I mean...
Knee length.
Knee length.
That's hilarious.
I have Smile, the musical.
Mm.
And
oh, Disneyland.
I just think any girls in the bathing suits that you would have worn in a...
You actually couldn't smile in the 20s.
That many girls smiling on a stage would have been censored.
Smile in the 20s.
Okay, I've got Jefferson Mays.
Oh, what?
And
Jeff,
will
you...
anything he did in the 19th century probably would have been censored. I love you, Jeff.
I have John Cameron Mitchell. So,
well,
you would have been fine.
I think John Cameron Mitchell could have played any leading role, male or female, in any number of decades, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah. I sort of like the idea of him as a very louche, alcoholic Barrymore character, but more on the nose in John.
Oh, totally.
So who am I thinking? What is the character?
I just want to see him do Sally Bowles now.
Oh, yeah.
John Cameron Mitchell as Sally Bowles.
I can see John Cameron Mitchell as Sally Bowles and... The other guy.
The MC?
No, not the MC. Her lover.
Cliff. But his name is like Brian in the
yes.
movie?
John Cameron
yes.
Mitchell
okay.
as Cliff and
no
Sally.
No, that's to Brian.
It's okay.
I can see that.
Thank
and
you.
He would have like this beautiful body painting done where it's like half
he's half,
his body.
Yes.
I have cats.
Where do you go from there?
I don't think that would have worked in the... I don't think that cats only could have worked in the 80s and it nailed
it.
It
did.
Yeah.
They nailed it.
Because I feel like people in the 20s would be like, what is this? I'm going to the Tilt-A-Whirl. Like, I'm going to do the Charleston somewhere. I'm not watching Cats.
Is Fanny Bryce in this?
Yeah.
Because I only see Shen, she's in.
Oh, goodness. Oh, Thoroughly Modern Millie.
They would have loved it.
A show about the 20s.
But a show about a woman being independent and just loving herself first. I don't know.
It's the greatest love of all.
It's the greatest love of all.
Just forget about the boy.
Oh,
I get it now.
Oh, you're
the
worst. Thank you so much.
I've got The King and I only want to say that was Mary Beth Peel at one point, who was nominated this year with Yul Brynner in The King and I.
Isn't that amazing?
Shout out to Mary Beth.
That's crazy.
Wow.
I love Mary Beth.
How about Beowulf Borat? Won a Tony for his set for Act One.
And
I think in the 20s, he would have been thrown, kicked, hurled out of any
to the
theater.
Beowulves?
No.
Yeah, they would not have liked his kind
They would
of
not
like,
have liked his sort of representational style.
But that's not exactly what a house looks like.
And yet we lived in it. And I had to stir soup that wasn't in the pot.
Yep.
Serve it that wasn't in the bowl.
They wouldn't have liked that.
Did you guys
that.
See, was that show Skylight Start?
Skylight.
Where she,
Skylight.
Where
Skylight.
She cooked.
I wished I'd seen Skylight.
Oh,
oh
with,
my goodness.
With what's it called?
And the second act just smells like spaghetti.
Well,
they had real
was it
kitchen?
Bill Nighy and Carrie Mulligan?
Nye.
Yeah.
Was it Carrie Mulligan?
That's the one.
Uh-huh.
I saw her in The Seagull in London in 2007. Before it came over here with... Because
even before she was in Blink.
Because I saw it with Chiwetel Ejiofor, who they replaced with Peter Sarsgaard when he came over
You mean
here.
The original
That's
Lola
right.
in the Kinky Boots movie?
Yes.
You're How welcome. I love him.
I love
How
him.
How I am prepared to leave every aspect of my life for him.
I have The Sound of Music, and they would have been like, what's a Nazi?
What's a Nazi mother?
Mother.
But that actually brings us to the end of our episode.
Oh, my God.
We want to remind you to follow Indecent at Indecent B-Way on social media.
Drink? Is that all right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Of course. Oh, yeah. We're
drink
done.
Up.
We're
drink
finished.
Up,
we're finished recording. Oh. Yeah.
There were air quotes that no one listened
yes,
to.
Oh, yeah. Just sorry. You can't listen to air quotes. But one question before we do leave. What's your favorite musical? What's your favorite play?
Wow.
Put you on the spot.
Oh, my God.
Or your favorite experience seeing one or the other.
Yeah.
I'm going to jump in, Tom, because I can tell
jump
you're
in,
thinking.
Baby.
I think I'm going to say my favorite play without thinking, okay? This was mm-hmm. quick.
Sure.
Is Angels in America. Because of the experience of seeing it.
Yeah.
Because of seeing it on Broadway, and when it was over, the audience leapt to their feet, and I couldn't move any muscles in my body, mm-hmm. let alone clap. And I had friends in the show, David Marshall Grant. But I would say that. And it's certainly, I know, not going to suffice long-term as my favorite play, but it's the first thing that flies into my mind as
oh,
the
yeah.
most recently transcendent experience.
It's supposed to be amazing in London right now.
So wait a minute, favorite play, favorite musical?
Yeah, go for it.
Well, mine I'm gonna sit back.
The Visit times two. The Visit is my favorite musical, and the play, The Visit, is...
Ooh, you got a double header in there.
Yeah.
I see what you did there.
Did you see that?
I might say Cabaret.
That's
a
strange
of old is my favorite musical. And I mean not I Am a Camera, but Cabaret. Oh my God, that spoke to me on so many levels.
So great.
As a young actor, excited to be doing this, as a sort of Jewish person, at 100 levels, it just felt. And now, sorry, I stopped myself. And now to be in our play where we visit pre-Weimar Germany in
yeah.
our beautiful suitcase song for Berlin. It covers a lot of bases of beloved theater moments.
And even a little bit of the end of the play feels very cabaret-esque.
Yeah, yeah, I do.
But like in a aesthetic way, in a...
Yeah.
Like of the revival specifically.
Specifically
too.
Of the
yeah.
revival.
Of the revival and specifically of the moment where
the back lights come up.
The lights come up and there are all the Nazis in the audience. It's that kind of wonderful.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That like it's like I'm like getting goosebumps right now thinking about it. Like
I'm bumping with you.
That whole moment, you know, of you know it's coming, but there's still that shock to it because no matter how much you study it in school, and no matter how much you hear about it from everybody, when it actually happens, like in a show, in a theatrical environment, and just like the reality of it, like hitting these characters and yourself, it's always that moment of just like, you're like, how? Why?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's quite a surprise and indecent in a way because,
yeah.
you know, it's
too.
Like this seems to be about anything but mm-hmm. that. And then all of a sudden you turn this corner and go,
all
oh my God,
in this
how did we get here?
Yeah.
And yet, from Paul's point of view, how could you avoid getting...
Yeah,
enter a
there was a point where I was like, oh, maybe we're not going to talk about it. And then I was like, oh, okay.
And
yeah.
for a 90-minute show with no intermission, you fit in a lot, and it never feels like
crammed.
You've crammed it in. Exactly. Everything feels
yeah.
like it's
yeah,
organically
but,
built.
Paul's done a remarkable thing where she's
wonderful.
Written a number of incredibly short scenes. They're really short. And all the actors just have to, you just have to get there
yeah.
right away
instantly.
And do this thing.
Yeah.
And through that structure, she's able to deliver all of this information,
it's,
all these points of view.
Go
and
see it.
Go see Indecent.
Go see it.
Come see Indecent.
Go
say.
To the court. It's
invite
a,
them to Indecent.
Please. You have a personal invitation from Mimi Lieber and Tom Nellis.
Hi. Please come.
I love it.
We end every episode with a quote.
Okay.
And today's quote is, a blessing on your head.
Mazel tov.
Mazel tov. Mazel tov.
Is that an Irish quote?
Yeah.
Translated
yeah.
from Beckett,
yes.
actually.
It's Celtic.
Top of the mitzvah.
Yeah. Top of the mitzvah to you.
Oh my God, I'm going to start saying that.
Yeah. So good. Again, follow Indecent B-Way on social media. You can follow us at Broadwasted.
All of them.
You can... You can go to iTunes and subscribe to us.
What?
And you can rate and review us.
And I will.
Yeah,
oh,
girl.
My God.
We want to thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, really, thank you so much.
Pleasure.
It was pleasure.
Pleasure. Hopefully and the drinks are great.
Yeah.
If you're out there, I hope you're drinking.
As we end as we end every episode, we end it with a little...
Yeah. Zoo-doo-wop-bop.
Cheers.
Cheers. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Hey, from Greece.
Eyes. I heard
oh,
it.
Yes.
Eyes.
I had sex for 7 years.
Eyes.
Wait, oh, eyes, yeah. Oh, sorry.
Wait,
the old lady is
married lady still in the room want to see eyes.
Thank you for having us.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.